Guys, welcome to Better Bachelor. This is Joker with a face for radio and a voice for print. Today's topic is going to be, why do women love criminals? Why do they love the guys that have been locked up, and sometimes they're the serial enders, the people that take out a lot of people, the guys, the crazy guys that take out a lot of people, and why do women chase after them? I found a pretty good article. You know, I always assumed he's the ultimate bad boy. But actually, it's a little bit different than that. It's actually about control. And I think in some ways, and this is just, this part is just my personal opinion, is that I think it also has to do with a little bit of why some of these educators, these women educators, are making moves on young men, men that are sometimes under the age of 17, 16, 15. So I think there may be a little bit of correlation in there. And a psychologist that wrote a book on it, I'm going to cover an article on that. And then we'll do our dating profile of the day. So let's get recording. What brought me up on this story is this story here that's done by Elle.com. And but it's called The Journalist and the Pharma Bro. And there's a journalist for Bloomberg that does kind of white collar crime. And her name is Christy Smythe. And if you some of you may know, but there's a guy named Martin Shkreli. And Martin Shkreli was a kind of a CEO of a pharma company, and he raised the price on kind of a necessary drug by 5,000%. And, you know, he was frowned upon by basically everybody. Like, everybody just called him a skeez, and that he was taking advantage of people that need medicine. And so he's kind of a pretty hated guy. So how did a married woman that was a journalist, how did she move over and start with this guy? And then we're going to talk about female guards getting involved with prison members, guys that are locked up. And then we're going to talk about the psychology behind it. I'm going to just touch on this article quickly. But it says, The Journalist and the Pharma Bro. Why did Christy Smythe upend her life and her stability for Martin Shkreli, one of the least liked men in the world? And this is an extremely long, detailed information about it. I'm not going to read all that, but I wanted to read the intro. It says, almost every weekday for 6 years, Christy Smythe took the F train from Park Slope downtown to her desk in Brooklyn Federal Court in a press room hidden on the far side of a snack bar. Smythe, who covered white collar crime for Bloomberg News, wore mostly black and gray and usually skipped makeup. She and her husband, who worked in finance, spent their free time cooking, walking Smythe's rescue dog, and going on literary pub crawls. We had the perfect little Brooklyn life, Smythe says. Then she chucked it all. And you know, the reason why this kind of struck me a little bit is, again, how many times has it happened to you guys in a relationship? Because it's happened to me, where if somebody said, hey man, how's everything going? You go, dude, it couldn't be better. Like, we have this and everything's going well, and we have the same hobbies, and we do this together, and we're happy. There's just not a thing in the world that could go wrong, I think, at this point. And then literally overnight, or in some cases in months, everything falls apart. And the guy's left there standing like, I don't understand what happened. They say here, over the course of 9 months, beginning in July 2018, Smythe quit her job, moved out of the apartment, and divorced her husband. What could cause the sensible Smythe to turn her life upside down? She fell in love with a defendant whose case she not only covered, but broke the news of his arrest. It was a scoop that ignited the internet because her love interest, now life partner, is not just any defendant, but Martin Shkreli, the so-called pharma bro, an online provocateur who increased the price of a life-saving drug by 5,000% overnight and made headlines for buying a one-off Wu-Tang Clan album for a reported $2 million, just throwing money away. Shkreli, later convicted of fraud in 2017, is now serving 7 years in prison. Now, here's what's interesting. And this is a pretty good read if you guys have the time for it. It's a bit dry, but it just shows you how the creep and all of a sudden this guy that's really, let me see if I can find a picture of him. This is her. And again, she's for her age, she's slim. She's not unattractive. And this is Shkreli. Let me see. The Weasley, I don't know if you guys know who this is. He's Weasley. He looks like a nerd. He's a skeezy, skinny, weird guy. But she left a happy marriage for this guy. So hey, if you're kind of a nerd, not that you're a skeezy weirdo, but hey, if you're a bit of a nerd, you never know, you might be able to steal a lady. So anyway, they talk about the story and how it's covered, and it's a really good read. But here's a woman that was happily married, everything was going well, and she bails for this guy. But only after he was arrested, only after he got in trouble. And they talk about even how she'd go into prison and she'd bake him cookies and she'd do all these things and she felt sorry for him. But why would a woman do that for a guy that's locked up where she can't be intimate with him? She can't take him and sleep with him. She can barely even kiss him. Why? Well, come to find out, it's about control. And we're going to talk about more on that in a second. Then I have this other article here. It says 10 times inmates got prison guards preggers and vice versa. Common logic dictates that a prison guard should not sleep with inmates, but it seems like not everybody agrees with that common logic. Some guards have no qualms about it, and vice versa. Pregnancies have even resulted. Based on the accounts detailed below, female guards seem to be much more likely to get pregnant from being with male prisoners than the other way around. And they do have stories of two male guards doing it with the women. And, you know, I in those cases, it was, hey, a guy wants some. But, and he wasn't smart about it. But for women, and some of these women were married, for a married woman to be with a guy that's in jail, has no money, no prospect, no power, no nothing, and then you look at the guy and you go, he's not even really all that, you know, great a guy. So what is the lure? We're going to get to that in a second. Tavon White and four guards. So this dude on that you see on the monitor here on the left got four guards pregnant. In 2015, authorities at Baltimore City Detention Center busted an illicit substance ring and a weapon running business operated by several members of a guerrilla family who were incarcerated at the prison. And this guy, Tavon White, and he had gotten four female guards. Kellyanne McDade, same thing. They have an unidentified corrections officer that was a guy, and apparently he traded illicit substances to the woman for it. Tashana Love Brewster, Nancy Gonzalez. Now, here's the thing. Nancy Gonzalez, at least from a couple of pictures that I've seen for her, is not awful looking either. She's like, if you saw her, you'd say, well, she'd probably have no problems getting a date. In 2014, 30-year-old prison guard Nancy Gonzalez received a 366-day sentence for having relations with an inmate at Lower Manhattan Prison where she worked. She'd become pregnant as a result. The prisoner was Ronell Wilson, who is on terminal row, we'll call it, for making for ending two police detectives. So this guy ended two cops, and he was going to be ended himself. He was on terminal row, as I'll call it, and she decided to be with him. Again, Allison Sharples, I'll leave this link down below as well, Alicia Smith. And again, some of these women are married. They cheated on their husbands to do this. So I did a little bit of digging and I found this article, and it's written by a Taylor Bell. And it says, an expert reveals the psychology behind women who love men behind bars. And the reason why I find this interesting is because not only was I like, hey, why do these women, I mean, throw away lives for guys that literally cannot provide for them, cannot do for them, and in some cases, like, really aren't that good looking. It just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And the same thing when I say, well, why would a woman, an educator, throw away her husband, her career, everything for like a 14 or 15-year-old dude, right? Like that doesn't seem to make sense. Because, again, these young men, while they may be young, I remember being 15. Like, I wasn't that athletic. I wasn't that good looking. And a lot of times you look at the pictures of the young men and you're like, I just don't understand this. Well, it turns out to be about power and that these women had harm done to them when they were younger. And it kind of messed up and they need control of a situation. And what better way to control a situation than when you're either the guardian or a babysitter or an educator or a guard over the person that you're interacting with. They say charm, intelligence, a solid career, all things women typically look for in a partner. But some women, it's the men locked away in prison who really get their heart thumping. Throughout the years, women have been attracted to men behind bars. In fact, California serial ender Richard Ramirez convicted Charles Manson, along with Northern California Scott Peterson, have all received marriage proposals in prison despite their heinous crimes. And with the introduction of prison pen pal websites such as prisonpenpals.com and convictmailbag.com, meetaninmate.com, women can communicate easily with prison inmates. In the book, Women Who Love Men Who End Other People, author Sheila Eisenberg explains the phenomenon. The book contains countless interviews with women, psychiatrists, lawyers, social workers, prison guards, in hopes of shedding light on why women are drawn to men behind bars. The book has been featured on CNN, The Today Show, MSNBC, Good Morning America in 2020, among other news outlets. Says Attention had a chance to interview Eisenberg, talked to her about her book and interviews with these women. Here's what she had to say. And the interview was edited and condensed for clarity. Now, again, this says nothing about educators, but when you look at it, a lot of this sounds to make sense when you look at all the educators that are doing the same thing with their male students. Eisenberg, was there any commonalities you found with the women who were attracted to men in prison? Eisenberg, the real crux of the whole thing is that there are women all over who are damaged. In their early lives, they've been harmed by either their parents, their fathers, their first husbands, their boyfriends, whatever. They've been intimately abused, psychologically and emotionally scarred. These are women who've been hurt. And when you're in a relationship with a man in prison, he's in prison. He's not going to hurt you. He can't hurt you. So you're always in a state of control because you're the one who's on the outside. You're free. You go in and you visit him. You can decide whether to accept or collect his phone calls. So in a way, even though cons are very manipulative, that's why they call them con men, and they're manipulative with women, it's still up to the women to decide how far she wants to go, and she knows she can't be hurt. And every single woman I interviewed had been harmed in the past, and that's what I found out. That was the big secret. Now, I'd be interested to see if the educators that are doing the same thing with men that are their students or whatever, have the same thing happening. Now, they don't talk about this in this interview, but again, it's kind of the same thing where we talk about control. And this is something I think that bleeds over a little bit into relationships today, is that when a woman is very forceful and demands men to do something, demand attention, demand money, demand that she gets a lot of likes or attention on social media, it may come down to wanting control of the situation. And not in all cases, but at least when it comes to this kind of situation, it does. Attention asks, what were the demographics of the women you interviewed? Eisenberg, and this was interesting. I like this part. Interesting. They come from all different backgrounds, different socioeconomic classes, different levels of education. They were highly educated women. One woman had a PhD and was a college professor. We just talked about the news anchor or reporter that did the same thing. She had an education and a husband and everything. Other women hadn't graduated from high school. Socioeconomic, there were rich women. There were poor women. There were women who are married, women who are single, women with children, women who didn't have children. All different kinds of women. The only thing they had in common, which I did notice as a common factor, was that there were a lot of Catholic women. Now, here's what's interesting. In the first article that I referenced there, the woman here that left for Shkreli, she's Catholic. She comes from a Catholic background. I found that very interesting that this happened to correlate with that as well. Did the women feel satisfied in their relationships with the inmates? And Eisenberg says the women were generally, as they described it, madly in love, desperately in love. They had fallen in love in a way that made them not see the world around them anymore. It all what I call stage one super romantic love. That's the way they saw it. It's the kind of mad passionate love that makes you lose your appetite, that makes you want to dance and sing. When you first meet someone and you're high as a kite on that person, they all use that language. I'm falling in love. I was blinded by love. I felt like I was falling off a cliff, and that was the initial reaction. That high, that capital R romantic love was kept up during the course of the relationship because the men were in prison, because they could not have a normal life with them. Nobody came home after work and took off his dirty socks and left them on the floor. Nobody said, oh, I forgot to pick up the laundry. Nobody said, you take care of the kids tonight, I'm tired. It was none of that normal give and take of a marriage or a life in comparison or a live in comparison relationship. It was always, will there be a lockdown? Will they let me be in to see? Will they let me in to see him? Will his lawyer? What is his lawyer going to say? Will he get paroled? All these dramatic, super dramatic, melodramatic things. And this is something that is in common with a lot of relationships today: is the drama, is the butterflies, is the unknown, is the excitement. Well, when you have somebody that you can't normally, you know, he's not up to anything. You know that he's not going out and cavorting with other women. So that woman knows she 100% has him at her beck and call. But in the same token, there might be something that may pull him away. Maybe he gets transferred. Maybe he gets released. Maybe she's afraid that when he gets released, he'll leave. And again, it's all these emotions, these overwhelming, tumultuous feelings that lend excitement to the situation. And this drives women crazy. And we talk about this, which is why the minute that a woman feels secure in a relationship with a guy, in many cases, especially if she's kind of addicted to that butterfly chasing and the tingles and the excitement and all the drama of it, well, the minute she has a guy that's completely, I love you and I'll do anything for you, she's done. And this kind of highlights that. They continue on, and of course, visiting someone in a prison where you're surrounded by razor wire and high brick walls and mean-looking guards makes your relationship almost like a Cinderella and the Prince. Everybody's out to get you. Okay, that doesn't sound like Cinderella and the Prince. No one was out to get them. It might make you sound like Bonnie and Clyde. That might be a better reference. They're trying to keep you apart. It's very dangerous, so it's romantic. So having a relationship with a man in prison like that, like for ending someone else's life, is almost like reading a romance novel where you never know what's going to happen next. You never know if they let you into the prison or if they're on lockdown or what's going to happen. Attention then asks, did these women feel guilty that they were in a relationship with someone else who committed a terrible crime? This also is interesting. I'm going to probably say that before all these sentences, but listen to the tap dance here. Most of the women I interviewed managed to find a way to rationalize away or mitigate the crime and excuse it. He didn't really necessarily mean to be ending someone else. There was even one woman I interviewed who was a juror on a jury that convicted a guy of ending someone. And then she went to visit him in the prison and fell in love with him. And afterwards she said, you know, he really wasn't guilty and I don't know why I convicted him. They find a way to excuse the person. Like one woman I remember, she said he was awkward and when the door hit his arm and the off. Let me do that sentence over because I said a bad word in there. He was awkward, and when the door hit him in the arm, the weapon went off. Another one said his friends were all drinking and doing illicit substances, and he got carried away, and he didn't mean to do it. Again, they form excuses to not only excuse their bad behavior, but the person that they care for. And this is what's so unbelievable. Women do this with the bad boys. Women do this with the bad boys. When their friends say, hey, you should get away from this guy. This guy is not treating you well. This guy he's out with other women. They'll find an excuse to rationalize why they're going to stay with him. They even do it here. Even when they at one point said he was guilty of something, they then change their story in their head to make it seem like, well, this is okay that I'm doing this, even though he did something horrible because he didn't really mean to do it, or he didn't really mean to do it. It's crazy. This story is not in my book, but if I was going to write a sequel, that would have been in the book. It was a young woman who this guy ended his grandmother. Okay, hold on. Sorry, I have to edit my words and be careful because of the YouTube censoring, but I want this to make sense. It was a young woman who this guy ended this young woman's grandmother. So he took out her grandmother. And for some reason, she started corresponding with him because she wanted to understand what kind of person could hurt a defenseless little old lady. And she ended up getting involved with him. And I said to her on the phone, how could you do that? I mean, didn't you feel angry? She said, he's a changed man. He's not the same person he was. And that's another big one. He did it, but he's not the same person. He found God, he found religion, or he's sorry. again, making excuses for the person that did something bad because they're just drawn to it. And again, for me, it sounds like the ultimate bad boy story, but according to this, it's because the women have ultimate control and they've been harmed in their past and they need to have firm control of a situation, and that it's also very dangerous and very edgy. And you combine those together and there you go. And I read something, and I actually tested this out in my real life. I read something that if you involve something that's dangerous or super exciting or something that elicits a vast, even if it's negative, a vast response when you go on a date with somebody, that will draw interest to you more so than having an amazing conversation over coffee or something like that. And when I heard this, it was several years ago, and when I was still actively on dating sites and stuff, I would go on dates and I'd ride my motorcycle, and I had a second helmet that I'd keep strapped in a little bungee net on the back of it. And when I'd pull up, I'd be like, hey, yeah, let's go so-and-so and hop on the back of the bike. And oftentimes, no, I don't like riding on bikes. It's scary. I said, look, I've been driving for 30 years now. I've been driving motorcycle. I've never had any accidents. Not going to be a problem. And when you reach to hold around me, if I go too fast, just squeeze a little tight and let me know. And I would adjust it. You know, I didn't want to scare the crap out of them, but it was exciting and it was thrilling. And I'd do something where it'd make them just a little bit nervous. And every single one of them, even those that said they were deathly afraid of motorcycles, said they had a great time and can't wait to go riding again. Well, riding again meant going on another date with me. It's that kind of excitement or that rush that drives serotonin and endorphins and things like that that make you memorable. These guys are doing the same thing because they're the worst of the worst men, and so there's an element of risk there. Back when I wrote the book, it was published in 1990. There was no internet, so it was pretty organic. The women who got into relationships were generally either women who worked in prisons, guards, or educators, or lawyers. Some of the prison lawyers got involved. There's a girl's famous story, which is about a lawyer who got involved with her client and she helped him escape. So that was organic. And then there was also pen pals. Somehow prisoners could get ads in magazines and women wrote to them. I guess they were lonely or whatever. But today we have prison pen pal websites and women can go to these websites and find men to communicate with. Attention then asks, unlike the women you interviewed, other women purposely seek out criminals of great notoriety. Why do you think some women pursue a relationship with men who have committed famous crimes? Eisenberg says, we live in a society where we have people who are famous for being famous, like the Kardashians. And when I wrote the book, we didn't even have people like that. Again, going back to 1990. I think the first person like that was Paris Hilton. She was famous for being famous. She didn't do anything. Since then, we've had a whole slew of people who are famous for being famous. And now with social media, we have people famous for being famous. So now being famous is even more desirable than when it was when I wrote the book. So how are you going to get famous if you can't make someone on social media read your blog or go to your Instagram or go to your Facebook page? You're not going to get famous by writing a letter to Brad Pitt because he's not going to answer you. But if you write a letter to the Boston Marathon boomer, he might answer you. So it's a very logical way to get famous. Unbelievable. Attention asks, was there anything that shocked you about these women? Eisenberg, what shocked me is the huge numbers, how common it is, how these guys have women all over the place. Your notorious enders have groupies. And now with social media, every one of us who gets involved emotionally with another person, we're doing it to fulfill our own psychological needs. And with the women I interviewed, they were all damaged goods, basically. Their needs were such that they couldn't really find satisfaction or get their needs met in a normal, healthy relationship. They had to find love behind the prison walls. And that just amazes me. So it goes to show you again that there is a large subset. Well, maybe large is the wrong word. There is a subset of women that need guys that are edgy, guys that make them nervous, guys that are exciting, guys that are outside there, guys that treat them poorly. And it's because a lot of times these women have damage in the past and they need to relive it or react it or have control of a situation to find comfort. And as society progresses along, there was a, and I wish I had the study in front of me, but there was a poll or an interview done where they asked several thousand users of Facebook and Twitter and social media how they felt. And 61 or 62% of them said that they were in kind of a deeply depressed state, that they were extremely sad. And what they would do is they'd try to alleviate this by using social media, because they'd be here, they'd feel alone, they'd want to find some happiness or something to make them feel better. And so to connect with other people, they open the social media apps. And what do they find? On Twitter, a lot of times it's people posting their best life, same thing on Facebook. They post their vacation photos, they show them their best lives, where in truth, their lives are nowhere nearly as good. And so you're only getting to see the best moments of everybody's lives. And when you compare that to your real life, it makes people feel like they're inadequate and they're not doing well. Same thing happens with guys when you go out there and you say, you know, I'm interested in dating, I'm interested in meeting somebody. And you go to these sites that are supposedly going to help you date women or teach you how to pick up women. And you read all these success stories, and then you try to implement the lessons that they taught you, and you have no success whatsoever. The truth is that they're exaggerating their success stories to sell you material. And you buy the material, and you're not going to have nearly the success that they did, because a lot of their success is either fabricated, or they're highlighting this one great instance they had 3 years ago, but they're leaving aside the 300 times they had a drink thrown at them, they were slapped, or they had the security of the club called on them. Okay, so that's the kind of the big takeaway from this, is that as society progresses and social media continues and the narcissism and the attention seeking and all of this, we're going to find things like this happening to more and more people. Now, they may not have had all the bad things that some of these women have had happen to them, but a lot of women are suffering from a lot, and young men are suffering from these issues too, but young men deal with it differently. Women want the attention. Women go out there and will try to get attention from men, and will put themselves out there in a very aggressive, naughty, spicy way, so to speak, so that they get attention. But men can't do that. So men tend to collapse inwardly, and they shut down, they isolate themselves, they'll play video games, and they handle it, and sometimes they end themselves. And that's really harsh to see. As a matter of fact, a lot of more young men end themselves because of this kind of thing, where women at least try to jump out there and gain attention. And because men are visual and women can wear less clothing, even if they're not exceptionally good looking, they will still get positive validation, where men do not. And so I think we're going to see more and more of this coming along. And it may not be the point where they go for the guys that are necessarily locked up, but they may go for the guys that are troublemakers, that are no good for them, that don't pay them enough attention, that don't return their texts. And those are the women that women seem to chase after, again, because of things that have happened in their past. So keep that in mind when you're going forward. Okay, now it is time for the dating profile of the day. So here we have a 35. Now, I do not have a photo on this one, so I don't know what she looks like, but that doesn't matter. What matters is what she says. She's 34. She is a single mom looking for someone decent. I work a lot, and my son comes first. I don't entertain anything that doesn't snugly fit a Magnum XL. And for those of you that are not in the know, a Magnum XL is a prophylactic protection, a wrapper for your Johnson. I don't entertain anything that doesn't snugly fit a Magnum XL. So that's got to even be small for you. Only third legs accepted. Would be nice to find someone to be exclusive with. So in other words, I don't think she's been exclusive, but apparently she goes out looking for extra large Johnsons. Very tired of stressing the extra large penis prerequisite. If you don't qualify, please don't hit me up. there's nothing in here about looks. There's nothing in here about height. There's nothing in here about athleticism. There's nothing in here about money. There's just, you better be bringing a third leg. You better be bringing some trouser pipe to lay. And I think what makes me laugh so much about this is that I forget what I was watching just a couple days ago, but it was some statistics about the average length of a man's Johnson. The average length is 6 inches. Very, very few men are above 7.5. Like, we're talking just a few percentage of us. Let me say that again. Only very few men are above 7.5 inches. There's very few of us. Little subliminal thing there. Obviously, they didn't advertise me, because the average would have been way lower. I'm built like a half roll of pennies. But so the thing is that if this is your only prerequisite, it really, really makes you sound like you're throwing, that a guy is going, that wants to date you, is doing the proverbial throwing a hot dog down a hallway. Like, that he's not even going to be brushing the sides of this thing. And there's a joke that was in the old, the movie Predator. One of the guys was telling one of the other guys a joke. And I'll see if I can edit this on the fly in my head. A guy says, hey, you know what? I went down on my girlfriend. And he said, my gosh, I went down on my girlfriend for the first time. And he said, man, I can't believe you have such a big, what's a good word I can use? I can't believe you have such a big taco. I can't believe you have such a big taco. And she said, geez, you don't have to say it twice. And he said, I didn't. That was the echo. So that's what this reminds me of in this situation, that if this is the only thing that she's looking for, and you know, while I think of that, I'm actually tearing up here. I'm laughing at myself, which is stupid. The thing that I don't understand is, can you imagine a guy saying on a website or saying on a dating profile, you need to be petite and you need to have a very small, tight, unused taco. And because I want it to come with a wrapper on it. I want it to be so fresh, I hear the air rush in as I open the seal on that thing. If a guy put that in the profile, it would be surfing the web as the worst thing a man has ever said, because how dare he? But this apparently is perfectly fine. I don't know. And the more profiles I come across in this stuff, the more I'm glad I'm not on dating profiles anymore. It is such a hot mess. How any of you guys stay on this stuff, I don't know, because I couldn't do it. Guys, if you'd like to support my work, links below as always. If you have, thank you very much. Best way you can support me is like, comment, share, subscribe, and check out my other videos. I'll leave it there. This is Better Bachelor. I'm Joker. And remember, you know, women do bad things, but guys do bad things too. A lot of times it boils to how bad their past was and some of the bad things that happened to them. Well, the way society is going today and the way bad parenting is happening, and you know, 50% of kids being raised today by a single mom, bad parenting is continuing, and it's going to get worse. And as such, the results of that are worse. And the people that are coming out of this, it's like a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. Eventually, you don't know what the original image was. Well, when you have somebody that was damaged that has kids, and those kids get even more damaged because they now have a parent that's damaged, and those kids have kids that are even more, you end up in Idiocracy. If you haven't seen the movie Idiocracy, go out and watch it. It is brilliant, and that is the direction we're going. So remember, guys, it has nothing to do with you. It's that a lot of these women are just... they just have problems.